everybody. Welcome to another episode of It's Okay to Feel. My name is Ed Portillo. I am the program manager here at NAMI Orange County in Orange County, California. And today we're talking about peer support with a peer support specialist, Jared Bedefala. Jared Bedefala works with NAMI Westside in the Westside area of Los Angeles. And he's a peer support specialist. He manages peer support groups as well as teaches peer-to-peer. One of our signature classes that helps individuals that have with a diagnosis to live a successful life and to understand their diagnosis in a little deeper way. So we get into that, we talk about peers, and we also talk about his five pillars to living a successful life post being hospitalized or having a diagnosis. So we get into a little bit of his story and a little bit of what he has learned to build these five pillars. And so if you're new to NAMI Orange County, welcome. Thanks for listening. We are a nonprofit that helps individuals, parents, and families who are affected by mental illness by providing classes and mentoring programs. And we have a warm line. We have different things that all support individuals, parents, and families. So if you want more information, go to our website at namioc.org. Namioc.org is where you can find information about our classes, about our programs, about our forums, our events. We have all the information there at namioc.org. You can also, if you like this, what you're listening to, if you've been listening to for a while, we appreciate it. I see through Spotify that we're gaining listeners and viewers, but we always can get some more. So if you feel free to share this to your friends. If you wanted to get in touch with us, you can always email us at NAMI or it's okay to feel at namioc.org. It's okay to feel at namioc.org. All right, let's get to the episode. And welcome everybody to another edition of It's Okay to Feel. We are welcome to have Jared Bedefala here. Jared, how you doing?
Doing great. How are you?
Good, good, good. So it's interesting because a lot of what we do here at NAMI is work with peers, people that mentor people that take classes. And so we're going to kind of get into that discussion today about how important it is to have peers mentor and ways to have success even with a diagnosis as well. So we're going to talk about that, all that with Jared. Jared, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, a little bit about how you got connected with NAMI?
Absolutely. I am a peer. I am somebody who's lived with my own mental health conditions, multiple actually. I dealt with a lot of anxiety growing up. And then after college, I was eventually diagnosed with a serious mental health condition. I had to go to a psychiatric hospital for 50 days. I had to go to a residential for 4.5 months in 2015. And I've been in recovery for the last 8+ years. I got involved with NAMI because in 2019, I was looking to make new friends. And I just did a Google search, mental health support group, Los Angeles. I found NAMI West LA. They were having this support group every Wednesday night in the West Los Angeles area. And I just went to my first support group and I haven't looked back. I started attending these groups every single week. About a year later, I decided to get trained to be a facilitator myself. Then I got trained for the peer-to-peer class. Then I got trained for the Ending the Silence. And I'm currently working part-time. I'm working full-time as a peer support specialist for NAMI West LA. I've been involved with NAMI West LA in a professional capacity since October of 2020.
That's great. Wow. And you're also a speaker. So you also go out to different...
I am also a speaker. Yes, I am also a speaker. I got the chance to present my five pillars of recovery to mental wellness for NAMI Westside Los Angeles, NAMI Urban Los Angeles, and the Self-Help and Recovery Exchange. And I am a speaker. Absolutely.
That's great. Yeah. And We'll get into all of this as we kind of get into our conversation. But first, as a trained peer-to-peer teacher, can you tell the audience a little bit about what that experience is, what the class is all about? Why is it something that's so meaningful to so many people that take it?
Absolutely. So I took it as a participant two or three times. Each time I got something new out of it. And then I have taught it probably four times, five times in the last few years. I always like to distinguish it from the support groups, because the support groups is people just get 3 minutes to talk about how they're doing, versus the class is a curriculum. It's an 8-week curriculum. And every class we talk about different things. In some classes we go back to the same things. So for example, we talk about things like expanding our support networks, identifying our support networks. We talk about the brain, the biology of the brain. We have guided relaxation exercises. Week three, people get a chance to tell their story. We talk about advocating for ourselves. We talk about relationships and effective communication skills. We also have a guest speaker. So over the course of 8 weeks, every week has a curriculum, and it's very comprehensive, because I think, and this is something I've experienced through my own five pillars of recovery, I think that recovery from a mental health condition isn't just one thing. There are many things that go together to help somebody successfully recover. And this class really tries to address all of those things over the course of 8 weeks. And it inspires some lively discussions between attendees. And overall, I feel like it gives people a good leg up for identifying maybe what they do or don't have, and identifying what they may need, and giving them the support that they may need. So it's a really good, comprehensive 8-week class. And one of the other things we do is we do SMART goals almost every single week. For those who don't know, that's specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, timely. Usually every week, maybe after the first or second week, we check in with people during the beginning of the class. How did you do on your goals this week? And then we validate them and we encourage them. And again, it's just a way of getting people to think about what they want to do for themselves in their life and to take action. And again, every week just kind of supplements. It all comes together and also creates a really good learning environment for adults in recovery like myself.
And it's important that you were saying that the difference between a support group and the class, where the class is more curriculum based, the support groups are really for you to come and get support on a weekly basis to talk about what's going on in your life. But one of the things I think that's also important too is that it's peer led. You know, it's led by an individual that has a diagnosis themselves. How does that work as far as like the community that is being built? Is that also a unique experience in the class?
In the class itself or the support group? The class?
In the class, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think it definitely does build community. People get to know each other during the class. They connect with each other during the class. And, you know, people are free to become friends with each other and hang out outside of class if they so choose. I think the class really brings people together who are all dealing with similar struggles. And I think it does engender friendship and community with each other.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the things I think it's unique about all the classes that we offer. They're all led by individuals that have lived experience, whether it's family to family,
yes,
peer-to-peer, or basics, which I think is very special, because you're going into the experience. You're not being taught by like a professor or an expert or somebody that's there. Like, you're really just going to go along the journey, because that other person maybe has gone through similar situations, but maybe they've had a successful, living a successful life as a result of that. And that's what we're going to get into now, when we kind of talk about what you've gone through and your story. You have this, the pillars, the five pillars of living a successful life, or living a life that is with a diagnosis, but you can,
yes,
you know, kind of, you have navigated this way through it. So I want to know if you could kind of unpack that for us and tell us a little
sure.
about those pillars.
Well, as I said earlier, I consider the beginning of my recovery journey to be the summer and fall of 2015 when I was at a residential. So I've been in recovery since then, which is about 8+ years. We're getting to 9 soon. And a couple years ago, I was I asked myself, what are the things that have gotten me to this point? And that's how I came up with the five pillars, because I wanted to simplify. Okay, how could I break everything that I've been through, everything that I've gone through, and everything that's worked or even didn't work into easily relatable, tangible five pillars that anybody could kind of relate to and follow with easy action steps. And so I came up with that a year and a half or 2 years ago. And the five pillars are itself, pillar number one is what I like to call basic stability. And I call it that because it's basic. We need to be able to just get through every day without being in a crisis. That's kind of level one. And in basic stability, I talk about potentially accepting clinical support like a psychiatrist or a therapist. I talk about embracing non-clinical support like a friend or family or a mentor or a sponsor from a 12-step group. And I also talk about structure, because one of the mistakes that I made in my recovery journey was I was so focused on everything I thought was wrong with me that I told myself, I got to fix everything before I start to live my life. And as a result, I wasn't working, I wasn't in school, I wasn't doing anything. And I look back and I realized that was probably one of the reasons my mental health got so bad, because I wasn't living life in the moment. And so that's why I advocate for structure as part of basic stability, whether it doesn't have to be a lot. It could be a support group once a week. It could be volunteering at a food pantry twice a week. It could be an internship. It could be one class at a community college, but just something to keep people engaged in the present moment and in their lives in the moment. And then the last thing I would add to the first pillar is, and this is something new that I'm adding, is housing, having a stable living situation. Because in my opinion, if we don't have a stable living situation or a living situation feels unsafe or causes a lot of triggers, it's going to be hard to recover. And then the second pillar is what I like to call having a self-care plan, which includes asking ourselves, what are the different aspects of my life that I need to cultivate on a daily basis? So mental, emotional, physical, spiritual, financial, intellectual, et cetera, et cetera. I usually primarily highlight mental, emotional, and physical. But the point is sitting down and actually asking ourselves, what do we need to do to take care of these different areas? And then I also talk about having coping skills to use when we are super stressed out, because we are all human and we're all going to have bad days, especially in recovery. And it's in those bad moments when we especially need coping skills that are gonna work and calm us down a little bit. And then actually Mike Tyson had a famous quote, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. And basically that just means, you know, we can all have a self-care plan. We can also have everything organized and planned out, but sometimes life is still going to hit us and we're going to need to respond to that. And then the last element of the second pillar is, and this is probably my favorite, is having just one non-negotiable self-care tool that we use every single day. This could be exercising 4 to 5 times a week. Because I know some people, they just have to move their body to feel like themselves. For me, it's journaling. I do it every single evening. You know, it could be anything for anyone. But the point is, what is one self-care tool that you love, that comes naturally to you, that you feel good doing, and that really helps to keep you stable? And so that's the second pillar. And then the third pillar is more philosophical. It's trusting the process of recovery. It's reminding ourselves that bad days and setbacks are inevitable. They are inevitable. And that when we're in that down period, to remind ourselves that this is only temporary and this is part of the process, to trust that we're moving in the right direction. And then the fourth pillar is finding your community. You could even call it finding your tribe. The point is, where do I belong in the world? What kinds of people do I want to be friends with? Where do I feel safe and at home? For me, that was NAMI West LA. I went to those support groups for a year as a participant. And I just felt like, because I had these mental health conditions, they had these mental health conditions, that I felt like even if I didn't want to share on a particular day, there was an undercurrent of feeling like I was in the right place. I was in the right community for me. And so just having a community is so beneficial for our recovery and our lives, I believe. And finally, the fifth pillar is what I like to call expanded self-awareness, and then
Mm-hmm.
following your intuition. And you don't really have to call it your intuition. If you don't subscribe to intuition, that's fine. You can call it your gut reaction, or you could simply call it asking yourself what you want out of your life, your dreams, and your purpose, and moving in that direction. But basically, it's how can I become more aware of who I am as a person and how I am in the world and my thoughts and my feelings and my behaviors? And then how can I apply that self-awareness to heal and to grow and to help me progress along my recovery journey? And then for me, following my intuition has led me to NAMI, has led me to facilitating support groups, which I absolutely love, and it's part of my passion and purpose. And then it's led me to public speaking as well, which I absolutely love, and it's part of my passion and purpose. And so that fifth pillar is kind of like, okay, I'm stable. I have my community. I have my self-care plan. I have my clinical support, my non-clinical support. I'm doing something with my life every single week. Now, where do I want to go with my life? And so, you know, in a summarized version, those are the five pillars.
Yeah. And I like the first one in the sense you're saying that stay in the moment, because that also ties, I think, into your idea of intuition. Because all of what you're saying is how are things that can not only like stabilize me, but I can grow roots somewhere. I can get, you know, something stable in my life by this consistency. I really like the idea of self-awareness and intuition, but how do you think do you develop that?
Which one, self-awareness or intuition?
Both of them.
Both of them. Well, self-awareness is a lot easier. But so, for example, there are several things that you can do to develop self-awareness. One is a very simple one. It's asking your friends, asking your family, asking your therapist, asking your sponsor for feedback. What do they notice about you? What do they think are your gifts and your talents? What do they see in you? Because sometimes we're not the best judge of ourselves, especially when we're in recovery and we're struggling. And so having friends or family that can be like, yeah, you do this thing really well, or like you come across this way, and it can make us more aware of the things that we're actually offering to the world. And it can help us become more aware of our own personality and our own habits in a really positive and empowering way. A therapist, for example, based on their training and based on the months or years that they've gotten to know us as a client, they probably have seen us progress and grow, and they can probably shed light on things that may help us feel better about ourselves. And of course, there's the other side of it where, you know, sometimes people can give you constructive feedback into your struggles and your challenges as well. And sometimes that can be helpful too, to just be aware of this is what I'm dealing with in the moment. So relying on people that are actually in your support system to give you feedback is one. Another one, and it might sound cheesy, is taking one of those personality tests online. The Enneagram test, the Myers-Briggs test. I mean, I took the Myers-Briggs test. I think I'm INFJ, if I remember correctly. And basically, I saw this description of 30 characteristics related to my type. And I was like, oh my God, I relate to 95% of these characteristics. And it just made me appreciate myself and understand myself more deeply. And another one that I really like to talk about is journaling. And I could talk about journaling forever. It's one of my favorite things in the world. But basically, journaling is a way to develop self-awareness, because as we take time every morning or every evening, however you want to do it, as we take time to write down our thoughts, our experiences, our emotions, stream of consciousness, if you want, we start to kind of develop an observer perspective of who we are and what's going on in our lives. And I can tell you, for me, sometimes I can go back and read a journal from years before, and I'll understand it from a completely new perspective. So I would 100% recommend journaling, a regular journaling practice, as a fantastic way to cultivate self-awareness. And then as intuition goes, that's a little bit harder. I'm kind of naturally intuitive, but I would say that, you know, to me, it's like this, it's this knowing that I just experienced. It's this sort of, it's kind of like a gut reaction. This just, I don't know where it's coming from, but it's coming from somewhere, and it feels right. It feels like I know that this is the right path for me. And so I'm not an expert in how to cultivate intuition, but you might be able to recognize it if something, for me, it's as if a thought comes out of nowhere, but there's just this certainty around it, and there's this feeling around it that it's something positive related to the direction I want to move in for my life. And so I think whether it's a gut reaction or intuition or just a certainty about a certain dream or goal, it's about recognizing when it comes up and then moving in the right direction towards it.
Yeah. And I like the idea that really, like, you know, you might not be able intuition might not be something that comes naturally. You certainly could take a test. Like if you take that Myers-Briggs test and you see that you have, you're intuitive, then you're kind of like, oh, okay.
Right.
It's something part of me. But it also is something that I think you're right. It is something that you might need to test. It might be need something that you need to develop. Because, you know, a lot of times we get into bad habits. Like for instance, well, maybe we'll have a bad eating habit because our parents didn't took us to McDonald's too many times, and we're like, we love McDonald's, and we really, oh, wait a second, there's actually good food that we can eat that's fresh. But you didn't really knew that you had that the option when you were younger. So but let me kind of change the subject a little bit more to this idea of, you know, there's a stigma around mental health.
Yes.
And
Yes.
we at NAMI are very, you know, involved in trying to eliminate that stigma. So in the time that you've been involved with NAMI, in the time that you're kind of like now the other side and you're teaching and you're helping others, what are the signs of hope do you see about eliminating the stigma of mental health in our society?
Sure. The very first thought is NAMI's Ending the Silence program. And if anybody doesn't know what that is, it's one of NAMI National's cardinal programs. And basically, we typically go into schools, usually middle school and high school. Once in a while, I think I may have talked to college students or graduate students once or twice, but really it's more middle school and high school. So it's, you know, it's at the age from 11 to 18 around. And we go and we give a, I'm a, I'm, I've been the lead presenter and the youth presenter. The lead presenter gives a 30, 35, 40 minute PowerPoint presentation. And then the youth presenter tells their own story of recovery. But what I've noticed is that because we are going to these schools and we are educating these young minds, these young students about mental health and stigma, that I feel like if we talking to the youth at that age can be so impactful for changing the stigma, because they're going to grow into adults and they're going to have grow into leadership and they're going to grow into positions and they're going to grow into full members of society. And if from a young age we were already talking about mental health and we were talking about fighting stigma, that could have a huge impact on society and how people perceive it. So I think the Ending the Silence presentations does a great job with that, in just educating people about stigma, about what words not to use, about how you could help a friend if you're struggling. Because I'll be honest with you, when I was in middle school and high school, I don't think I even knew what the term mental health was. And I really didn't know the term stigma. It was just out of my orbit.
Yeah.
Even though I was struggling with intense anxiety and I really could have used help, I had no idea what mental health was. But now these kids, 11, 12, 13 through 18 years old, are getting this education early on. So that gives me hope.
Yeah. And really, one of the things that's kind of special about working with NAMI that I've seen, I'm not sure, you've probably seen this too, is that you get people that will come to you and say, thank you. My family is better because we have this conversation. They know how to deal with you know, me better, or they know how to communicate to me better. I know how to communicate with myself, you know, with others. I understand myself, you know, that getting people to give back and say how they feel, that's really kind of unique about NAMI too, is that you can kind of see, you know, within what you're doing, stigma falling, stigma kind of like, you know, going away with that, which I think is really rewarding work with NAMI.
Absolutely. I mean, I think in addition to the support groups, what I love with NAMI is that we're also helping the families as well. Educating the families and how they can support themselves and support their loved one. And in, through education, you know, we're also fighting the stigma for adults as well.
Okay.
It's very
Absolutely.
powerful.
Yeah, and so kind of can we get into like it sounds like one of the exercises that you do. I like the idea of one of your pillars that says non-negotiable. And your love
Yeah,
for
non-negotiable self-care tool.
non-negotiable self-care tool and your love for journaling.
Yeah.
Is there a certain way that you journal? Is there a certain like talk a little bit about that, about how important it is and the different ways that people can kind of engage in journaling.
Sure. So there's so many ways to engage in journaling. I actually gave a whole Toastmaster speech on the power of journaling a while back. There's a lot of ways to engage in journaling. I like to do stream of consciousness, which is just I write or type whatever comes in whatever order that it comes. But I love it because every evening I just get to be in my own space alone. I get to reflect on the day and I get to think about what I went through that day and I get to process it. And it's turned into just this habit and part of my life that I absolutely love because, as an introvert, there's a lot of joy for me in just reflecting on life. But I do it for so many reasons. It helps me to regulate my emotions. But it also, when I journal, it feels as if, although nobody's seeing it but me, it feels as if I'm writing my own autobiography. It feels as if when I use the journal, everything that I've gone through that day, everything that I'm going through in my life is part of a larger journey filled with meaning and purpose. One of the things I've really seen is such a struggle, an existential struggle for folks in recovery, including myself, is feeling like the struggles, the suffering, and the bad days have no meaning. And so when I journal, it's like, no, it does have meaning because I'm putting it into the journal. And one day I'm going to look back and see the ups and downs and see where I am now and be proud of where I came from. And so journaling for me is very powerful in that way. And so you could do stream of consciousness journaling. You could do more focused journaling, like gratitude journaling. What are three things you're grateful for that day? You could use your journals to set goals. You could use your journals to set intentions. I mean, there is so much variability in how you can journal. But the most beautiful part about it is it is your private canvas, and you don't have to worry how you're going to be judged or what anybody's going to think about it, because it is only for your eyes and your eyes only. And so it's a beautiful practice, and I would encourage it for anybody. I prefer to actually type on Microsoft Word because I'm a fast typer, and I prefer to just be able to access it later on. And you know, this is I will sometimes type 50 to 80 pages every month in my journal, just because I love being able to get everything out and I love being able to process and reflect, and it gives me a lot of joy. So this is my non-negotiable self-care tool, and it brings up my passion. But for somebody else, like if it's exercise or surfing, go do it. Like, have fun, enjoy it. Do whatever is going to make you feel good and give you stability. But in terms of journaling, that's why I love it so much.
Great. Yeah, that really helps. So I think a lot of people kind of, like you were mentioning earlier about not living in the moment where you feel like you got to do everything. Like I got to write every day 4 pages. I got to do all these different things. And you start, it doesn't matter. What it matters is just to begin and just to write whatever you want to write. You know, that
Yes,
be freedom
yes.
in that.
Yeah, there's no pressure, it's just you. You don't have to worry about what anybody's going to think. If you want to write 2 sentences, you can. If you want to write 10 pages, you can.
Exactly. Yeah, and that should be a lot freeing to a lot of people, especially people that you know when you're maybe in the stage where you're kind of figuring out what to do. You know, you have a lot of things going on, and then journaling could be that one thing that helps clear a lot of things in your mind.
Yeah, it's
Less.
like externalizing, it's like a different form of venting. Because if you get it on paper, it's not as scary anymore. And you can see it and you can process it because it's right in front of you. And then you can learn from it too.
Almost like in a way going to therapy, you know, where you're talking about things and you bring it up and you're like, whoa, I didn't know I
Oh,
thought
yeah. Journaling has gotten me through a lot of
that. I
tough
know.
days. And, you know, I like to say one of the reasons I talk about non-clinical support as part of my first pillar is because therapy is once a week. And there's six days and 23 hours outside of having a therapist once a week. And so what are we going to do to take care of ourselves during those other times?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's great. And I hope that, people take into consideration a lot of what you're saying. You know, these five pillars are really, fundamental in a lot of people's recovery. Taking things like peer to peer, if you have a diagnosis yourself, is something that we offer for free. Any NAMI,
any NAMI programs are free.
Yeah, all NAMI programs are free.
Yes, yes.
From NAMI West Side to NAMI Orange County.
Here. And there's not much pressure. Like, you can come to a peer-to-peer class, and, for the most part, if you just want to listen and absorb things, you can. In our support groups, people keep their video off. There are people that I've, and this is nothing, not bad at all. It's up to people. But there are people who I've never seen their faces because they prefer to keep their camera off. And that is totally okay. It's all the programs are free. And if it feels intimidating at first, that's okay, because there's very little pressure to talk. There's little pressure to participate. You can just kind of dip your toe in if you want to.
Right. Yeah. And it's, and the thing that's unique too, is that we offer it to all people, to, no matter what the diagnosis is. It could be from anxiety to
Yes.
agoraphobia.
The NAMI groups are not like, like Recovery International is very specific.
Right, exactly.
Depression, the Depression
Depression,
Anxiety
Bipolar.
Association, or I forget the name of it, but there's another huge
Yeah,
mental
Depression
health.
Bipolar Association. Yeah.
Yes, yeah, it's, that's probably for depression and bipolar.
Right.
Share has a bunch of support groups, the Self Help and Recovery Exchange, and sometimes we have people who come to support groups and go, "Is this for bipolar specifically?"
Right.
Or, and we just know this is a general support group for mental health. As long as you are struggling with your mental health yourself, you are welcome to the group.
Right. And we also offer family support groups as well for family.
Exactly.
Members.
Yeah. Because
Great.
the supporters, supporters need support.
Exactly.
And so family members need support, not only for support, not only to know how to support their loved one, but to support themselves, because
right.
it can be stressful for them too.
Yeah, and again, one of the things that's unique about what we offer is every support group, whether it's a peer-led support group or a family-led support group, it's led by individuals that have lived experience.
Yes, everybody is on the same playing field because
Exactly.
we're all in the same boat.
Yeah, which makes it very special. So, as we kind of get close to wrapping up here, I wanted to just give you opportunity, Jared, to kind of give us a, what is your kind of message that you want to leave everybody? Maybe the best way to contact you too. Maybe kind of just give us a little message as we
Sure.
here.
Well, obviously I wanted to come up with the five pillars because I felt like people are looking for solutions and they're looking for ways to help themselves. And I want people let people know that, like, I created the five pillars to create a roadmap for recovery with very easy action steps to take, where it's not overwhelming, it's very simple, but these are some things that you can do in your lives to help you understand where you are in your recovery and what you need to do next. And when it comes to recovery, the 12th NAMI principle of support, which we read every single time we do a support group for NAMI West LA, for the peer support group, the 12th principle is, we will never give up hope. And I think that principle is it's super, super important. We often ask people in our support groups, out of all of these 12 principles of support, which ones stand out to you the most today? And sometimes I feel like 50% of the time it's, we will never give up hope. And so I just want to remind people that, as dark as it might seem, and trust me, I know, because I spent 3 years where everything, my mental health completely deteriorated, and I had to spend 50 days at a psych hospital and 4.5 months at a residential. So I've been in that dark space for a long, long time. And I just want people to know that there is hope and there is help out there, and to not give up, because it really is possible to recover if we have certain things in place, like support, like housing, like self-care, like all of these things. And so if anybody wants to contact me, I believe, Ed, you'll be putting in the show notes. People can reach me on LinkedIn. Feel free to send a connect request and message me, and then I'd be happy to talk to you. And then we can. I also have a Calendly link if anybody would like to schedule a time to talk to me. And I'd be happy to hop on to a phone or Zoom call with them and see what I can do to help.
That's great. Well, yeah, we appreciate you taking the time to join us for this episode. You are at NAMI Westside. So if anybody wanted to take a class or take a support group, you might see Jared there or leading one. So it's at the NAMI OC or NAMI Westside website. But yeah, so thanks again, Jared, for joining us. And we look forward to, you know, seeing how things develop. And thanks for coming.
Absolutely. And yeah, we've got 4 support groups a week. So there's a lot of good support out there. And I'm sure NAMI Orange County has the support groups just the same. And so I would just say, please take advantage of it if you want community and you feel like you need help.
All right. Thanks again.
Thank you so much.
See you on the next episode.
Yep.